Good afternoon. I'd like to call the House Transportation Committee to order. Today's March 27th. The time is 1:22 p.m. in the afternoon. Present, we have Representative Sullivan Leonard, Representative Klayman, Representative Kopp, Co-Chair Stutz, myself, Co-Chair Wohl. We have a quorum to conduct business. We ask you to turn off your phones. And if you need to communicate with any of us, do so through Laura Steidolf, our committee staff. I'd like to thank Sandra Edwardson, the Transportation Committee Secretary, and Leah Kraft from Gino LIO. First on the agenda today is State Affairs Committee substitute for SB 163, Definition of Commercial Motor Vehicles. After that, we'll be hearing the committee substitute for House Bill 136, Motor Vehicle Dealer Franchises. At our last meeting, committee heard HB 314, the House companion to SB 163. It's my intention to move that bill from committee today. However, since the Senate version has come over to us is slightly different, we will hear the changes made to SB 63, take some questions, and entertain a motion to move the bill. We have John Binder, Deputy Commissioner of DOT, online. Briefly reintroduce the bill. Dan Smith, Measures, Standards, and Commercial Vehicle Enforcement, available online too. And Graham Judson, staff to House Transportation Committee, will explain the changes made in SB 163 between it and HB 314. If Graham, you want to come to the table and make the presentation? Mr. Yes, Representative Sullivan Leonard.
Thank you, sir. Do we have a version that shows the differences, a sectional analysis on this, or do we not need one between the two?
I don't know if we have that. We're going to hear the explanation of the differences.
Okay. Through the chair, Graham Judson, staff to Co-Chair Stutz. It's one change, and actually, I don't know if you want to have Deputy Commissioner go through the reintroduction, but I'll just explain the change first. If you look at House Bill 314 included in your packets on page 4, line 2, the definition of school bus says used to transport public pre-elementary, elementary, or secondary school students to and from school. In Senate Bill 163, that has been changed, same page, page 4, line 2. And the word public has been removed. And I think the reasoning behind that was just to include all schools. And that was the only change made.
Thank you. Just for the record, did you identify yourself, full name, and what your affiliation
is? I did, but I will again.
I don't remember. So
Graham Judson, staff to Representative Stutz.
Thank you, Graham. So to paraphrase, the change is you took out the word public. Is that correct?
To the chair, yes, public was removed between the House and the Senate version.
Okay. Are there any questions? We have Mr. Binder online and Mr. Smith. Any questions from the committee for the removal of the word public? Hearing no questions. Madam Co-Chair.
Mr. Chairman, I move to report committee substitute of Senate Bill 163 I'll start over.
Please do.
Mr. Chairman, I move to report committee substitute Senate Bill 163-GS-259-7-D out of committee.
Seeing no objection, we will move that bill out of committee. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. Call the committee back to order. I'd like to recognize Representative Newman is here at 127. And next up on the agenda is HB 136. There's a proposed CS for this bill. Madam Chair, may I have a motion, please?
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I move to adopt the proposed committee substitute for House Bill 136. 30-LS0561-R as a working document.
Hearing no objection, the work draft before us as a working document. Representative Klayman will be presenting the bill today, and Gary Sleeper with Auto Dealers Alliance will be online if the committee has any questions for him. And Harriet, Representative Drummond is here at 1:29 p.m. Representative Klayman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Matt Klayman, State representative for House District 21 in West Anchorage. I want to thank fellow members of the House Transportation Committee for hearing House Bill 136 again in committee today. The impetus to introduce House Bill 136 stemmed from continuous conversations about the need to make updates to the statutes that affect franchise agreements between auto dealers and auto manufacturers. Much of the discussion centered around warranty practices and franchise termination. Last year, this committee heard an initial version of House Bill 136, but during that meeting, we heard significant pushback from the auto manufacturers. With those objections in mind, my office met and brought together both manufacturers and auto dealers earlier this year in January, and we worked on a revision that is acceptable both to the auto dealers and the manufacturers, and this revision is what is before you today. House Bill 136, the committee substitute, updates warranty policy to be more consumer-friendly. It provides customers who live in remote locations, either off the road system or more than 100 miles from a dealer, with a reasonable option for warranty coverage. As it stands, current customers often need to pay to get their vehicle to and from an authorized dealer for warranty repairs. With House Bill 136, the manufacturer will be responsible for warranty repairs in the remote location or shipping the vehicle to and from the remote location to an authorized location at no cost to the consumer. House Bill 136 also updates the rates that manufacturers will pay auto dealers for warranty work. The updated rates may not be less than the rates that an auto dealer charges customers for similar non-warranty retail work. This equalizes the rate for repair work and warranty work across the board. Finally, House Bill 136 amends statutes concerning terminations and succession of franchises. Manufacturers must have a good cause for terminating the franchise and must provide dealers with notice and allow the dealers to attempt to fix any areas that are out of compliance with the agreement before they can terminate a dealer. During the sale of a franchise, a manufacturer must also take into consideration whether the potential buyer is an immediate family member, partial owner, or meets the standard requirements for approving the sale. And what I would describe in broad terms with regard to manufacturers and dealers is that they have a very interesting relationship because there's a common interest that the more cars they sell, the better it is for both the manufacturers and the dealers, but the manufacturers on a nationwide level oftentimes have a lot of requirements and demands that oftentimes you hear from the dealers that those can be somewhat burdensome and challenging for them to succeed as an auto dealer. So this tension between the manufacturers and the dealers is what leads to these bills and these negotiations, is to try to make it so that not only in the end will the manufacturers and the dealers succeed and succeed together, but their relationship will be one where the dealers don't feel like they're overwhelmed by the demands of the manufacturers, and also that the manufacturers don't feel like they're completely at the mercy of the dealers, because if that relationship is out of balance, then actually both end up not doing so well. And then at the core of the bill was really keeping an eye on what is the consumer interest and making sure that the consumer who's actually buying cars from and bringing cars to dealers for warranty repairs is satisfied with the service they're getting. And there's a real interest in maintaining a very stable workforce of folks that provide this work. As all of us know, we've taken cars to get repaired before, and a reliable repair operation becomes really critical to keeping the cars and getting them back soon. I would just note in the packet there's a page that describes, titled Driving Alaska's Economy, and it shows the number of jobs that are involved in the auto dealership business and the number of average employees per dealership and all the part of our economy that auto dealers provide through selling the vehicles of manufacturers. There's a very long and detailed sectional summary. It's about 4 pages long. I will not go through that unless people have questions, because I recognize that when you're about 4 pages of reciting what's written in front of you, that's probably not helping anybody. But happy to answer questions, and to the extent I don't have the answers, Sarah Perman from my office is here to help me out. And I think Gary Sleeper is online from an attorney that represents the Auto Dealers Association here in Alaska. And with that, I would be available for any questions.
Thank you, Representative Kleinman. It looks like, do we have a question from Representative Newman?
Thank you, Representative Kleinman. And Ms. Stratt, I kind of enjoy hearing about some of the different, what the different sections are on the analysis on that. I did a bill very similar to this, but it had to do with ATVs and outboard motors and such, and warranties, type of a lemon loss. I'm kind of familiar with the same thing and the issues that they go through. And I just was wondering if we maybe did the sectional, I could kind of familiarize this with the automobile industry at the same time and the crossover in there. Because
if it's the will of the committee that I go through the sectional analysis, I can certainly do that.
Only if there's, excuse me, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair.
And Representative Newman, if no one else on the committee wants the detail, I'm more than happy to meet with you after, when we're on a committee, and go through the sectional analysis and describe everything we've done. And we certainly have folks from both the auto dealers and manufacturers that would also be available to meet with you.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If we could just maybe hit the major changes or high points, we should at least have that.
That's fine. Yeah, and we will be hearing this bill again. We're just, yeah, I'm holding it today, so we're not in any hurry to pass it out. We don't want to pass it out, but there's not major rush on it today or anything. I would like to hear some of the, you touched on some of the points.
Sure, I'm happy to touch on a few of the points.
Yeah, if
you look through Section 3, provides that manufacturers may not terminate an auto dealer unless they've complied with the notice requirements and shown good cause for that termination. Now, auto dealers have, once they've got notice of termination, the auto dealers have up to 120 days to correct areas in which they may be out of compliance with the franchise agreement. And the only place in which the manufacturer really has kind of broad leverage to terminate a dealership is if they can show that a dealer has systematically engaged in fraud. But the dynamic between notice they're not in compliance and an opportunity to fix that is a really big part of this statute. And then Section 4, it was another key part about the termination analysis, because Section 4 makes clear that good cause to terminate a franchise does not include the failure of the auto dealer to meet sales or service goals due to factors beyond the dealer's control, including market conditions or an insufficient supply of motor vehicles. One of the things that we heard was that dealers would sometimes say, well, we're supposed to sell a certain number of vehicle model X, and then they're trying to sell vehicle model X, and they actually don't get enough of vehicle model X to meet the quota. And then the other side is sometimes those manufacturer quotas may be unrealistic in terms of Alaska conditions, a perfect example being that all-wheel drives are very popular, and so if the quotas say you're supposed to sell a certain number of two-wheel drive pickups and a lower number of all-wheel drive pickups, and then they discover they're having a hard time selling the two-wheel drive pickups, and the dealers are saying, well, not only is the quota unreasonable in light of market conditions, but I could sell 20 more all-wheel drive pickups if you just get them to me. And that's that part about good cause to terminate a franchise, to be able to look specifically at local market conditions and see what's selling and what's not selling in light of what manufacturer requirements may be.
Representative Clement, if I may interrupt. Representative Newman, also we were trying to get the auto dealers and manufacturers in today, or at least some of the dealers, and for various reasons we had to postpone that. So I think we'll be going over this bill in a lot more detail when the parties are present. So,
Mr. Sleeper from the attorney for the dealers is actually online and available today.
Right. I knew that, but I mean the actual
I understand.
Yeah, Representative Newman, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand that, and if anybody has public testimony, obviously that's a high priority. It's, sure, to make sure that they have an opportunity to speak to us first. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'll touch just very briefly on Section 6 and 7 that just has details about when a termination occurs. There's a whole framework in terms of how those costs are allocated and what the dealers are responsible for paying for and what the manufacturers essentially have to buy back from the dealers and the framework within wherein that occurs. Section 8 provides a more detailed process for the transfer of dealerships. It's very common that dealers are interested in either selling the dealership to family members or selling it to people that have been involved in the business for a long time and have a certain percentage of interest in that dealership. And so this section actually provides protections so that a dealership that's functioning fairly well and has somebody either within the family or that has ownership interest can take over the dealership, and the manufacturers can't can't prohibit that. The manufacturers also have some interest, and it's been a national concern. They're trying to get a more diverse group of owners of dealerships, and so this section also gives the manufacturers some ability to look at some of their efforts to try to have more diverse ownership to the extent that that doesn't conflict with existing ownership rights and moving it on to folks that have that ownership share. Section 9 provides a list of factors that a dealership and that a court would look at in the event there's a termination of dealership that goes to court. And Section 10 talks about the burden of proof when a lawsuit like that ends up in court. Section 12 is the section that provides a lot more detail both about the rates that are paid for warranty work and how to provide the warranty work. One of the issues that the dealers have identified is that the warranty rate that manufacturers require or that manufacturers agree to pay for warranty work is sometimes lower than the retail rate that dealers charge here in Alaska, and the dealers have articulated that that differential actually doesn't help their providing effective customer service. And so part of the statute would create a framework for the dealers to be able to establish what is the average retail rate and then have that apply to the warranty work. And the effect of that will be that dealers will be essentially charging the same charge for warranty work as for non-warranty work, meaning somebody comes in with a car that's 2 years old and needs a warranty repair, that'll get the same priority as a car that's 10 years old and isn't under warranty, but would get paid directly to the repair shop and the auto dealer by the consumer. And then another provision that we actually heard quite a lot about in public testimony and from folks that contacted my office was rural Alaska's concerns, and I think we've all heard stories about somebody that's in a remote location, say in Sitka, they say put the car on the ferry, and the car gets put on the ferry and it gets sent to Juneau, and then it gets to Juneau and it gets repaired, and then the owner gets a call and say, your car's ready for pickup, and they say, well, when's it going to be on the ferry? And they say, well, it's not on the ferry. You need to come to Juneau to get it. And that was an area in which the statute makes it very clear that the manufacturer, where it's a warranty repair, if they actually do need to bring it to another location, the manufacturer's got an obligation both to get to the repair shop and get it back to the consumer. And that was actually a very important part for the dealers in terms of working warranty repairs and making sure that the customer would get the service they're looking for.
And Representative Clayman, it looked like also now they can authorize a non-dealer to work on the vehicle if they get approval, so they don't have to move the car from a remote location.
And actually, that was one of the things that, you know, you learn different things in the process. And one of the there were kind of two things that I learned. One was that when you started studying the challenges of getting warranty repair work in remote locations, you might be well served sometimes to think about getting an older car that isn't under warranty if you don't live where warranty repair is available. But the other thing that was actually more illuminating is that the manufacturers have very strict requirements that certified mechanics do the warranty repair work on warranty cars, because if you don't have a certified mechanic, then the warranty is voided. And if you ever wanted to see a bunch of lawyers come in the room and say this is a bad idea, that gets all the lawyers to show up. But what's interesting is that it's not, say, if it's a Ford car, it's not a Ford-certified mechanic. It's actually a Society for Automotive Engineers certified. So your certification to do that work would actually, a certified mechanic in Kodiak, for example, or Sitka, but they could do warranty work on any car as long as they have that certification. And so part of the challenge for Alaska is improving communications with the manufacturers and the dealers so that they actually, in these remote locations, identify people that are certified mechanics. And in theory, you could have one mechanic shop in Kodiak that actually did the warranty repairs on every brand in the book, because they would have that Society for Automotive Engineer certification. They could do the repairs, and that would meet the manufacturer's warranty requirements. And that's an area in which, just for Alaska, this statute doesn't fix that challenge, but the challenge for both dealers and manufacturers is to really try to expand the people in different locations that can actually perform the work and have the tools to do that, because the manufacturers, they don't insist on it being a Ford dealer repairing a Ford vehicle. Their insistence is that it's a certified mechanic.
Thank you, Representative Clayman. If there's no, are there any further questions from the committee? Representative Cupp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We heard this bill last year, and it's clear that there's been a considerable amount of work that's gone into it since it's last been before us, so I wanted to commend the bill sponsor on that. Is it my understanding that we have consensus now with the manufacturers and the dealers to this version?
That is my understanding, that the on a national level, these bills always come forward from the dealers asking for some changes to the statute. The manufacturers, when the manufacturers are agreeable, they don't actually come and say, we endorse the bill. They come and say, we don't have any opposition to the bill.
Great. Just one more
follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Clayman, it seems like, but I don't want to overstate it, it seems like with this legislation, it would be easier for dealers to now do business with customers in remote locations by having some guarantee of price reimbursement and maybe expand the opportunities for partnering with mechanics. Is that the case?
That's correct.
Thank you.
And on that, there's, through the chair, there are some benefits if there are certified mechanics in some of the remote locations. I think all the parties will be happy, because if a dealer sends a mechanic, say, from Juneau to Sitka, then you get into this complicated question about, okay, so who pays for the travel time? Because the mechanic is typically paid for the mechanical work, but not for the travel time to get there. And so you hear from the dealers that if we're sending our mechanics all about, that becomes a significant cost for the dealers.
Representative Stutes.
Thank you. I just have a comment. And I really appreciate something like this coming from a rural area. Everybody in Kodiak, or most people, drove a Ford because that was the only dealership we had there. And you couldn't get your cars fixed. And I got a Toyota. And interestingly enough, I happened to be sitting on a plane next to the West Coast guy from Toyota. And I said, you know, I'm almost sorry I bought a Toyota because I can't get the warranty work done. Anyway, they did exactly that. They associated one of the repair shops in Kodiak, and now they have a certified mechanic, and so I can get any warranty work done. So now everybody either drives a Ford or a Toyota. Mm-hmm. So this will definitely open up the market.
Thank you for the comments, Representative Stutes. We will hold this bill. We will get invited testimony and subsequent meetings from dealers and manufacturers. And I would thank Representative Clayman for his work.
Mr. Chair, do you want to hear from Gary Sleeper today, if he's on the line?
Oh, is he invited testimony? Is he just here? I don't see him on my machine here. But
he was supposed to be available by phone today.
Yes, he's on. Okay. Yes, sure. Mr. Yeah. Sleeper, are you there?
Yeah, this is Gary Sleeper. I actually didn't have prepared testimony today, but I was on to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Sleeper. I think we'll save our more in-depth work when we have public and invited testimony. But I just wanted to thank you for being available, and thank Representative Clayman for diluting, distilling some of these issues and making the bill a little more reasonable to deal with and getting both parties on board. So thank you for that. And at that, it's 1:48, and this meeting will be adjourned. We'll pick up HB 136 in next meetings.